free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net. See our past lineup of speakers and some archives from those shows, as well as see who we have coming up next. And actually, next week, we have Chris Patton, who's a friend of our guest today, friend and associate, I should say. Sir Charles Schultz III is talking to us today about a 6-kilowatt concentrated solar design he's come up with that combines the solar hot water panels with one large Fresnel lens to turn the hot water into steam for running a turbine to generate 6 kilowatts of electricity, all for around $6,000 to $8,000, with a return on investment of 3 to 5 years. Charles, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be on the show.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Last minute notice, I got a hold of you about an hour and a half ago and roped you into this. I appreciate you doing that.
Well, that's okay. The opportunity to give information to people is one of my priorities.
Well, that's good. You had a bit of a warm-up last week. You were on Coast to Coast for 3 hours talking about this and other subjects.
Yeah, Coast to Coast has always been a good venue. I've had a lot of fun with it. It's always a great show.
Yeah. I am creating a feature page about this technology and with a link to that show at Coast to Coast in your bio there, so people can check that out. I noticed that the thing that got my attention is a couple of videos that were posted on YouTube, linked from Coast to Coast. Very impressive system. I mean, this, if I understand correctly, this is the most accessible, the most affordable solar system out there that can provide solar for, as you say in the video, this makes solar affordable.
Well, it does, and many of the components are things that anyone can locate and assemble themselves. The principles are very, very simple. You see, the key in this particular application is high temperatures. Energy is easily transferred if you have a great difference in temperature, and that raises your efficiency and how much energy you can harvest from a system. So I concentrated on using Fresnel lenses, which are readily available and easy to understand, to generate extremely high temperatures that we can use to generate our power. And we use a hybrid system. We can actually generate enough hot water as a waste product in the operation of the system to provide your heating for your home if you're using radiant and floor heating, and to provide plenty of hot water for other uses as well. So the system provides you with a hybrid that allows you to generate hot water and electrical power. And there's another benefit that generally isn't recognized. If you place the system on your roof, every square meter you cover is actually being lowered in temperature. You're not having a lot of heating from sunlight that you have to run your air conditioner to get rid of. So you get a threefold benefit from a system such as this.
In the summertime, when you're not that interested in heat except for the hot water, are you going to have to vent off this hot water in some other way, or is that not necessary?
It isn't necessary. If it becomes a problem, we can easily sell a system that has a radiator enclosed as well, and it can radiate away any waste heat that you have. Many people, however, if they wish to carry it to the next level, will probably add thermoelectric generation as well and recover some of that heat as usable electrical power.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the system kind of piece by piece. You have solar panels on your roof, just regular hot water panels, and that's heating up the water, and where and how hot do those get?
Okay, if you use the system that uses the regular hot water panels, those can get about 160 degrees Fahrenheit on typical applications. They sometimes get hotter depending on how much sunlight you have. You take the hot water that's pre-energized by the sunlight, and you run it through this system where we now use the heat of a Fresnel lens to create high-pressure steam. Now, in some of our systems, we use simply the Fresnel lenses to generate the high temperatures, and others we can use the hot water panels as well. So the basis of this is to gather as much heat energy at as high a temperature as you can manage, and then use it to create high-pressure steam. The steam runs a turbine, which is coupled to a generator. So in many ways, it's a very straightforward system, There are a number of components that would be difficult for some people to handle because you're operating at steam pressures and temperatures, and you're circulating working fluids around, and you don't want to lose a lot of heat energy. But it is an apprehensible system, and many people who understand it could easily build it.
Would you consider this something that a do-it-yourselfer who's quite handy with gadgets could slap together?
Absolutely. In fact, it's no different from any other generating system. One of the things that people don't realize is that most of our water, most of our power is generated through the use of water. Over 90, 95%, something like that, of our energy is created by using water as a working fluid. And it doesn't matter whether you're burning coal or natural gas or even using a nuclear reactor. The heat, in the end, converts the water to high-pressure steam that runs the turbine. And so we're just doing the same thing.
Now, the efficiency of this, a typical solar panel, photovoltaic solar panel that goes directly from sunlight into electricity, is somewhere in the region of, at best, 30% efficient, usually closer to 15, 20%. And you're saying that this system is 60% efficient. How do you compute that?
Ah, that's very simple to do. Solar panels or photovoltaic panels typically come in three grades. The monocrystallines, which are the expensive ones, typically top out at about 21%. The aerospace grade ones can go to 35 to 38. You can't afford them generally. The polycrystallines usually run about 15%, and the amorphous ones run about 9 to 10%. They're much cheaper, and that's why they get away with that low efficiency. In our system, we're not looking for electrons that have been knocked loose by sunlight. We're actually using the heat to generate high-pressure steam, so we get a more direct a method of getting the higher energy, higher quality energy, through a turbine and generating our power. Turbines can actually convert 90 to 95% or more of the motion of the steam into rotary motion, so they're very effective if they're properly designed and operated in the right temperatures and pressures. When you get the generators, generators are pretty good, too. Some generators run 70-80% conversion efficiency or so. So when you combine the efficiency of the turbine and the generator to the system, you're getting a much higher percentage of return on the energy you invest versus electrical power out. Add to that the fact that we're getting hot water as well, and 30% of most people's energy bill goes just to heating water in your home, and you're really way ahead of the game.
And when you talk, is this 60% calculation, does that include the hot water panels as well as the Fresnel lens?
No, it doesn't. We're looking at just the potential for energy output in the form of electricity at that 60%. All of the things you get from hot water are free.
So the surface area that you're covering from the solar panels of whatever kind, turning that into electricity and heat, that's a 60% conversion of the solar energy into electricity / heat. Is that how the 60% is coming in?
That's correct. We're getting about a 60% conversion. And right now we're in testing phase, and we're doing minor adjustments and experiments to see just how we get the maximum out of that. We believe 60 is pretty close to the maximum we'll be able to get out of it effectively. In many cases, you can get more, but the investment of your money and your hardware to get that higher percentage typically isn't that good. You have to sort of balance the curve. How much does it cost versus how much you're getting? And we're targeted right at a dollar a watt, and we're looking at a payoff time of 3 to 5 years. In some cases, depending on where you live or what the application is, it may be as high as 10 years, but I think that still compares very favorably to systems that usually run 20 to 25 years, for instance, windmills or standard solar photovoltaics.
Yeah. Well, it certainly does bring solar into an affordable position and competitive with the existing infrastructure. One of the things I wanted to address with you on this segment is to talk about the, you describe the system as something that a handyman could go out and build by pulling together the different components. Once they have the concept, they go, oh, yeah, I can do that. But you are also pursuing developing this commercially so that you actually have a complete system that is ideally paired, the components are ideally sourced and paired together and installed professionally for people. Maybe we could talk, there's a couple of questions that come in here. Number one, when do you anticipate that to be ready? And number two, how does that interface with maybe the open source idea on the one extreme where people basically have a free-for-all to go out and build this design? Will the intellectual property and patent protection, if you're going to be pursuing that, impinge on people's ability to make these for themselves and maybe for their neighbors?
Well, actually, it won't. You see, there's nothing wrong if you go out and look up a patent on something and build a duplicate for yourself. The only time you run into trouble is when you try to do it for profit. That's when you step on somebody's toes. Intellectual property is really kind of a vague thing in some cases. In this case, it's pretty clear that everything we do is well within the laws of physics, and it's things that a lot of principles that people know. It's how we put the system together. It's the details that make it different from other systems. And we don't want people to be, you know, shut out of the ability to generate their own power. We want people to be able to do that because that's a freedom. You can make power however you like in almost any technology you can imagine. What really makes it easy is when somebody is manufacturing or mass producing something like this, it brings the cost down and it removes a great deal of the work. You know, as they say, the devil is in the details. Anybody can build a system that makes power out of sunlight if they just know a little bit of physics and mechanics. But again, in order for it to be cost effective, I mean, would you build a pocket calculator or would you go to the store and buy one? It's hard to meet the costs and the benefits you can get out of mass production.
What if, though, you were to list some components where people, you could say, you know, you get such and such a generator from Bosch and you get such and such a turbine from such and such a manufacturer, part number X, and you put them together, or you use such and such a grade of piping that you get from this company. Where, in other words, kind of a how-to instruction guide. Could you see yourself publishing something like that?
Well, I could. And the only thing is right now, in order to make good with my investors and make sure that we have the proper background to get this thing mass-produced, I can't disclose a great deal of the details at this point. I can tell you this. If you were to get typically any sort of an electrical generator and a steam turbine and combine them, then steam pressure is going to generate your electrical power for you. I wouldn't want to give capacities and power ratings and that sort of thing. And, you know, I also don't want to put myself in a position where it's possible to run into legal difficulties with people who injure themselves doing something like this. And I realize most of the people who do this, or even try to do this, have at least some acumen with tools. They have the ability to work with tools without cutting a limb off. But it's kind of a delicate balance right now. The people who fund my work, you know, obviously want to see this available to everybody, but they also want to be able to make a profit so we can continue to do this for everybody.
Right.
In fact, if possible, I'd like to put a couple of links out so people know where to look to find more information and see how they can get these systems in the near future. And we're trying to do this in 3 months to a year maximum because there's a definite need for this. People really need it. My work is presently being funded by a group who runs a website, freewillpower.org, and you can find some links there that show some of the details. We're posting an initial offering and some of the technical details there very shortly. And the other group that I've been working with, and Chris Patton may have told you this, is World's Nest. And worldsnest.com has a great number of details about some of the recycling and generating systems that we've worked on, and they even have a book for sale there if people want to get the details. And it's a very graphic book. You get many pictures of how the technology works, the sorts of things we've built, and how they all come together. The big thing is integrating all of it. When you generate your own electricity, you actually save 6 to 10 times as much water as you do that you normally use in your home. So generating electricity is a very water-intensive process. And the industry to develop and deliver the power and resources to your home just to keep your home running typically consume far more water than your home would. So even if you recycled 100% of your water at home, you're just scratching the surface. Generating your own electrical power is actually the most effective way of recycling water or saving water.
So in the process, like take your gray water, for example, you run it through this process and it purifies it while generating electricity?
Well, you could. The only problem is if you run gray water through a system like this, it's going to end up inside your heat exchangers and your turbine, and that could cause damage.
Mm-hmm.
What we typically do is we use the clean water supply that normally runs under your water heater. And we have a loop that bypasses and re-enters the water heater circuit. Like many people have backup water heating systems such as solar on one side and gas on the other. Well, we do a similar thing. The waste heat from our turbine is recycled back into your water system. And it gives you the ability during the day to generate as much heat as you need. And then during the night, you have that stored in your water tank. Or if you're using it for radiant, many people have a radiant heating system in their home these days. Then this will heat the slab up, and then during the night it radiates the heat back. So you're getting, again, a double bonus.
Well, it's still not connecting to me how the recycling comes in.
Well, you see, a power plant uses a great deal of water.
Yeah.
And if you were to generate your own electricity, you would be saving that water that normally would be operating a power plant. So it takes roughly 6 to 10 times as much water, depending on how much energy you consume in your home, as you normally use in your home, just to deliver electricity and services to your home. Industry consumes that much water. Every time you're generating electrical power at home, industry is not consuming all of that water. And it's kind of an invisible use to you. The average home uses about a cubic meter of water per day, a little over a cubic yard. And if you look at how much water that is, that seems like not a lot, but a fair amount. But somewhere between 6 and 10 cubic meters of water are consumed by industry and power plants just to provide electrical power and services to your home. So if you're making your own electricity, they're not consuming as much water, and you end up saving water overall.
What about this system? How much water does this consume to generate electricity in the 6 kilowatts?
Well, actually, the water isn't consumed. It's run through the loop and recycled. That's why we use a water reservoir, and that would be your hot water tank. It becomes the reservoir for our heat system.
Okay.
So it draws cold water out of the water tank, off the bottom of the tank. It flashes at the high temperature steam at high pressure. It runs the turbine, and then the turbine's condensate, which is still hot water, goes back into the tank. So the water is completely recycled. None of it is used up or consumed.
What about the issue of, I know in my dad's hot water system, it's not water that's running through those panels. It's sodium decahydrate or something like that. It's a non-toxic antifreeze, basically, so that you don't have problems. You know, they're getting 0 degrees Fahrenheit in the wintertime there. They don't want their solar panels to be freezing outside. While you're running water through the hot water system that would be up on the roof, how would you take care of the issue of freezing?
Actually, it's not an issue because we isolate our working systems from one another. We have a fluid that will not freeze working in our collection system, and we use the water inside. We transfer the heat directly there. So you don't have to freeze.
You are using a heat exchanger between the solar hot water system and
the
water.
That's how we manage to isolate the system, so there's no cross-pollination between them. You keep the systems isolated through a heat exchanger.
Now, when I was talking to one of your associates earlier today, Russ, he was mentioning that you've got some fiber optic cables involved in the system as well. Is that part of the transmission of the high-intensity heat on the Fresnel lens, or is that for lighting up inside?
Well, you know, we don't want to disclose too much, but we can use the fiber optics for interior lighting. One of the things we've come up with is a very easy way of transmitting high-quality sunlight indoors using light fibers so that you can generate a skylight without having to cut a hole in your roof. Now, the benefits of this are you don't end up with roof leaks, you don't have a loss of insulation value, and you can also do things with this sort of skylighting that would be very difficult otherwise. For instance, you can change the intensity or even the color of the light being delivered by light fibers using a color wheel or anything. So it gives you a lot of advantages. I know that running a little light fiber inside the house surely is much more economical and effective than cutting a large hole in your roof. And the other advantage is we can run a skylight into a closet or a basement using this system.
Right. And I know there are companies that actually pursue that particular avenue. You know, that's all they do is they're providing the solar through fiber optic cables, conveying that into the building, into the dark corners of the building. We covered that in our news a couple of years ago. I'm not sure where they're out nowadays, but that is a great concept. It seems like it's a bit expensive, though.
Well, to a degree it is. It really depends on what type of fiber you use. There are basically two types of fiber available in the market that people can get very easily. One is the glass fiber and one is the plastic fiber. Glass fiber costs a lot more, but it has a broader range of transmission. It's more effective. The only thing is the fibers themselves are very tiny, smaller than a hair, and they nick and break very easily. So you've got a limit to how easily you can handle glass fibers. Plastic fibers are a lot cheaper. Unfortunately, they also cut out part of the spectrum, and so you don't get the same sort of light transmission through a plastic fiber that you do through a glass fiber. However, it is cheap enough and easy enough to work with that almost anybody can do it without any specialty tools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things we were looking at was transmitting power through fibers for other purposes, and we found that, yes, it can be done, and yes, it does work. We just have to be careful where we apply it because we have a problem with energy density. With our system, we can hit temperatures hot enough to boil steel or copper and make lava out of rock, and some of the videos that you saw illustrated some of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to be very careful which technology you place where in the link, and that's some of the proprietary information. But eventually, we are going to share a lot of this information with people.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the talking about the Fresnel system, and maybe I'm mispronouncing this, it's spelled Fresnel. You pronounce it Fresnel?
Yes, that's correct. The S is silent, like many French.
Okay, is that a French word or something?
Yes, it is. In fact, he was the fellow who worked on lighthouse lenses many years ago. In order to make a lighthouse visible from many miles away, it took a very large lens, and they go up geometrically in mass as they get larger. And what he figured out was you didn't need all that bulk of glass in the center of the lens. He discovered a way to make zone plates or rings that do the same sort of focusing while eliminating almost all of the glass. And that's where the Fresnel lens concept came from, lighthouses.
Uh-huh. Now, in your prototype that you show in your video, you got that from a big screen TV.
Exactly. It's basically scrap, and many of those are available very cheaply. In fact, you can also find them in other applications as well. Overhead or view graph projectors use about a 1 foot square Fresnel lens.
Mm-hmm. So you know, if you really wanted to go cheap on this, you could probably source a lot of these things from the scrapyard.
Well, yes, you could. And, you know, since television technology is changing over the years now to flat screen, you're not going to see as many of these lenses on the market in television applications in the near future. And that's one of the things that actually works to the advantage of people trying to create cheap energy. These guys aren't going to have anyone to sell these lenses to pretty soon, and they're already tooled up to produce them. So what do they do? And I think that the solar energy market is the place to go.
Uh-huh.
Makes a lot of sense.
Speaking of glass, in your prototype, and you show this Fresnel lens mounted in an aluminum frame, what are you putting in there for rigidity so that it's impervious to wind and other types of environmental
impact. There are two things you can do. Two things you can do very easily. Number one, you can always put a thin sheet of plexiglass over the top of the lens so that you don't have to worry about it being scratched or damaged. And we found that plexiglass doesn't really affect the transmission of energy through the lens by much at all because most of the lenses are made of polycarbonate. The other one is, the thickness of the lens and the size of the lens can also control how rigid they will be. So clearly smaller lenses that have some fair thickness are already rigid, and you can make arrays of those. Larger lenses are generally made to be about an eighth of an inch or so in thickness, and the frame itself is typically enough to hold them. If you mount them in a frame and you tension your lens slightly, it's not going to sag as much. And one of the advantages of using plastic Fresnel lenses is if you have a hailstorm and you've got plastic lenses out there and one or two of them get dinged, they're cheap and easy to replace. You can do it in minutes. If you have solar panels out there, such as photovoltaics, you can be out thousands of dollars in a hailstorm.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some real advantages due to the fact that the materials we use are actually very easy to get, very inexpensive, and durable.
Now, in the... we talked about... the hailstorm, for example, is there a way that you could actually turn, would you have a design where you could turn the panel vertical so it wouldn't be as impacted by hail?
Well, you could do that. And understand that we do use sun tracking because you can get 2 to 3 times as much power very easily by tracking the position of the sun. So we do have sun trackers, and our arrays do move. And yes, you could tip the arrays so that they're at a more advantageous angle. You know, an even better solution might be, if you've got an installation like this, you could have an awning or something that slipped over it in times of hail.
One thing we've not talked about yet is the square footage involved in this 6-kilowatt system. I believe your video said 10 square meters?
That's correct. That's about, a square meter is a little over 10 square feet, so we're looking at about 100 square feet to generate the total of 6 kilowatts of electrical power. And that's actually quite modest when you consider the size of an average home. Normal homes in this country consume about 30 kilowatt hours of power a day, and that's looking at about a 2,000 square foot home, which seems to be the average. And again, about 30% of that is hot water, so there's about 9 kilowatts of your usage right there. And the rest of it is used for running your refrigerator and your air conditioner and all the other things you do. So, you know, we're looking at a system that should be able to provide all the power you need for normal operation and then some. So for those people who are hooked up to the utility grid and have the phase coupler, they can actually sell a lot of this power back to the utility if they'd like.
Now, when you talk about a solar source of power, it, of course, is going to be dependent on the availability of the sun, and you have clouds and rainy days, etc. Also, you know, the peak usage is in the low end of the sun in the mornings and in the evenings. So I would imagine your system would involve some kind of a battery and inverter system.
Well, that's right. Storage is the key to making solar work properly because, as you know, the sun's only up half the day. So in order to be able to have power available at off hours, when you don't have enough sunlight or when the conditions are inclement, you must have some sort of a power storage system. Now, typically that's done with batteries. Most people use lead-acid batteries, such as deep-cycle marine batteries, in applications where they're off the grid or where they want backup power. Well, we can combine this with a battery backup system, and, you know, they have a new development in batteries, and it is a super battery that combines high-density capacitors or supercapacitors with a standard storage battery. And between the two, you can get about four times the life, and you get much faster charging and discharging. And those are probably going to become the de facto standard pretty shortly because the market is growing, and they're actually seeing a lot of use in electric vehicles at this time. The other options are you can store it in other forms. For instance, there are flywheels that are now becoming available. They're already available for industry. And flywheels basically are just a big spinning top. They're sealed in a vacuum, so there's no air friction to slow them down. And they're levitated on magnetic bearings, so they're not contacting anything. There's no friction robbing energy from them that way. And you can charge up a flywheel that's about the size of a refrigerator. And those modules store 250 kilowatt hours of power. Now, those are meant for industrial use. What we're trying to do right now is work a deal with one of the flywheel manufacturers, and if it doesn't work, we'll probably do it ourselves, to manufacture much smaller units that are about the size of a camp refrigerator that can store about 30 to 50 kilowatt hours of power, and that would be enough to run your home for a day or two.
Mm-hmm. And that would probably handle most cloud cover situations, but not all. I know here in Utah, my dad's got a solar home with 6 or 7 different solar principles. You would really enjoy that. I'll have to send you a link to it. But, you know, they do have some times when the sun is away for a few days in a row. And it actually, ironically, in the winter, that's not as big of an issue because it doesn't get that cold when you've got the cloud cover. So you just put a few logs on the fire, and it's usually good enough to get the house warm. But would you anticipate that with a flywheel system that you wouldn't need batteries at all?
Well, if you had a flywheel system, your battery usage would be at least greatly reduced to less than 10% of what you would normally have. In many cases, it could be eliminated altogether. The thing that I'm looking at is in a truly comprehensive system, you're not going to depend on a single source of energy. The system that we've developed here, being solar, obviously has limitations because if the sun isn't up for 3 or 4 days, then you're going to have some backup power. What I recommend in all cases, if you're really truly off the grid, is to have not only solar, but also wind as well, or some other form of power. And understand that most of these systems are going to be sold to people who are already on the grid. So we've concentrated on making it something that the common man can put on his home with little or no hassle. And it's going to run for years and generate all, if not all, then the bulk of his electrical power for him. And again, in most neighborhoods, it's mandated you're required, you know, to be hooked to the grid. And I don't think that there are any cities that I'm aware of that allow you to live in the city and not be hooked to the grid. In fact, one of the discussions we had here was, well, It may mandate that we're on the grid, but nobody says we have to turn the breaker on. It might be the best solution for some. But many people aren't going to be able to buy a flywheel or a battery system, but they want to be able to do something environmentally sound. You know, this is a moral issue as well as an environmental issue. And so they're going to want a system where not only can they generate their power, but they can sell it back to the grid. And if you're on a system like that, you really don't worry if you've got no sun for 2 or 3 days. You've got electric power anyway.
I know with those wind systems for residential, I think they're in the region of $20,000.
Well, yes, they are. And that's some of the things that just don't sit well with me. It doesn't cost that much to build a windmill. And, you know, the system can be quite effective. Here's one of the things that strikes me immediately. You know that if you have a stream of moving wind, the science says you can extract about 59% maximum of that energy from it. So it depends on how much area of wind you capture. But you look at the windmills that are sold on the market today, and they have 2 or 3 blades, and they only cover 4 to 5% of that area. So the rest of it is simply blowing by. That's dollar bills lost in the wind. The farmer's windmill, which has a great number of blades that cover almost the entire area, is actually the most effective. It's the most efficient wind generating machine you'll find. It doesn't spin that fast. You might need a gearing system for it, and it'll be a little loss, but it more than pays back because you have far more area of wind that you're capturing. So, you know, those guys developed that thing over a couple centuries' time, and there was a good reason for it ending up in the shape that it is. Things evolved to match what resources you have to work with, and that paid them the most for their investment in time and effort. The farmer's windmill is the most effective.
Well, last week we interviewed a guy, Aaron Davidson, down in Australia, who has a turbine design for, actually, it's a, what's the phrase for that? I'll pull it up here in a second.
Vertical axis.
It's a Venturi system, so it's like the reverse principle of a funnel. You start on the narrow end, and as the water, this is for tidal systems, but it would also work with wind. They've found that they've been able to concentrate the flow of water. They've been able to increase it 3.84 times where they situate their turbine. So they're able to, just by putting that housing around their turbine, whatever turbine they put in there, whether it's vertical or horizontal axis, is seeing 3.8 times the speed of water going by it.
Well, yes. And, you know, controlling the environment that something works in is very important. And in the terms for windmills, most of them are situated high so that they have a nice, steady, undisturbed flow of wind. This is called laminar flow. Turbulence is the enemy. You lose energy as just random movement. When you put a funnel or a housing around a turbine or a bladed structure, you're eliminating much of the turbulence and you're controlling the flow. And so, yes, you do get higher efficiency. And, of course, if you can gather the moving air or water from a much broader area, your velocity goes up and your efficiency goes up. Most windmills or turbine systems work very best at a specific rate of operation, at a specific turning speed. And if you're below that speed, your efficiency falls off dramatically. So if you can bring your speed up to a specific rotation, you're going to get better efficiency. And a housing will do that not only just in terms of speed and volume, but in terms of turbulence. You're eliminating a lot of problems that are the enemy of gathering your energy effectively.
Talking about the threshold and windows of opportunity of operation, I should say, let's go back to talking about the Fresnel wind lens system, which takes the hot water and turns it into steam so it can then turn a generator. I would imagine that the amount of sunlight you're going to have to produce that is going to be fairly substantial. That if you, I guess my question is, what amount of or what extent of sunlight do you need for your system with the Fresnel lens to turn the water, the warm water from the solar panels into steam?
Well, that's one of the things we're determining through experimentation right now. We're getting figures of merit from how much sunlight it takes to produce a certain amount of heating at the time. But we stand by our figure of 10 square meters, and we also suggest that if you're in an area that doesn't have as much sun, you actually can add more collection area to the same system if it's necessary. And this is another interesting fact. You know, speaking of low sunlight, you know, Germany is effectively at the latitude of Alaska, and they have one of the most effective solar programs in the world, and they function quite well. So even though it might seem like a problem when you don't have as much sunlight as many other regions, it still can function very effectively, and it can make money for you. This is the thing that hits people right in the pocketbook. Energy is important, and people want energy, and they want to make money while they're doing it.
When you were talking about taking this commercial, and you also talked about the lighting applications, is this something that you would have as an add-on, an option for the customers?
Yes, we can put in a box that sits right up on the roof next to your solar energy system. Specifically gathers light and pipes it in the house for you and attracts the sun in the same manner. And we also have, one of the things that was mentioned was safety. We've designed a safety system so that if somebody cuts off the cable, it's not just coming in and burning a hole in the wall. It actually monitors whether the cable's getting where it's supposed to be. So if something happens to the light cable, something blocks it or something's in the way, it'll avert and go off focus so the sunlight won't continue to come in and cause a hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Because in an application like this, you can get some extremely high temperatures very, very easily, and even what's coming through a light fiber can cause you some grief if you're not careful.
In the video that you show, you're holding a piece of a stick in the focal point of the Fresnel lens, and it's smoking, burning, and it looks as though the focal point is askew from the focal point as the frame defines. Do you have a way of adjusting that so that went off its focal point so you could do that, or what was going on there?
Well, the thing is, if you're aimed directly at the sun, the focal point ends up exactly on the heat exchanger. If you turn the lens off axis slightly, the focal point isn't as intense, but it goes off axis. And
okay.
What I have done is turned it slightly off axis, and I was reaching the new focal point with the stick. In operation, one of the design things that we really took into mind was, if this is off axis for any reason, where's that energy going to end up being? And so we've got some design characteristics we've added that allow it to be safe regardless of whether it's on or off axis. That's a very good point.
Also, in talking about taking this commercial, you've mentioned a couple of organizations you're working with. Is there going to be a company name that is specifically tied to this technology, or is it going to come under the umbrella of one of these other companies? What company name are people going to be looking up to get a hold of one of these systems?
Well, that information will be on the freewillpower.org site. We are still working out the best name. It sounds silly, but a name can mean everything in the market, so you have to do a lot of research and demographics, unfortunately. And, you know, being a scientist, I don't really get into that as much as the people who are doing the marketing end. But when the name is available, it will be announced on that site.
Okay. So that hasn't been decided yet?
No, we've kicked about a dozen things around, and they all sound really good. But we want it to be simple and catchy, and we want it to express exactly what we're trying to do for people.
Uh-huh. And earlier when you said 3 to 9 months, that's how soon you think these things will begin to be available?
That's when we plan to begin manufacturing, yes.
To begin manufacturing, uh-huh. And you mentioned earlier that there are already industries out there building the individual components that are involved in this system. Are you going to be re-engineering any particular components, or are you going to be drawing from those components and your system will be making the best match of those components?
Well, actually, we've got a couple of custom items in our system right now that we're using, one of which is the turbine, and I don't mind saying it is an absolute work of art. I have a good friend, a very good friend, who is an aeronautical engineer, and he designed the turbine system for us, and it's just beauty. You just have to see it. And we're going to be mass-producing those, and that's the heart of the system. As for other components, much of that we can get off the shelf. Some things we can contract out to have stamped out or made, and the rest will be assembled right in our shop.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did mention earlier that you were going to be pursuing some patents. how many do you envision, and would you mind saying what those are going to be covering?
Nothing earth-shaking. In particular, a couple of the optical things that I've come up with for the sun tracker I think are rather novel. Some of the things that we're working on with the turbine itself is something that is a little bit different from the designs people have seen before. So I imagine that that itself is patentable. Other than that, the system itself isn't anything revolutionary. It's just a different way of viewing things. You know, some of your best ideas come from the most unusual places. I mean, you see it and you go, aha, why didn't I think of that before? It's that sort of stuff. Nothing really revolutionary, but something very solid.
In the video, when you talk about the hot water coming from the solar panels into the Fresnel lens where it then turns to steam, you use the word flash. It flashes to steam instead of using the word turns to steam. Is there a reason for that word flash?
Yes, we're using a flash boiler, one that converts it to steam very, very rapidly.
So it doesn't go from boiling, it goes from liquid to steam very rapidly?
Extremely fast. That's the key to making it compact and affordable. Very small flash converters.
Mm-hmm. And is that component of it, would you consider that to be a tricky part of the system that will require some good engineering?
Well, let's see. You have to know how much heat you have to work with. You have to be able to know the thermodynamics of your system. It isn't a tricky part to make. Just like a light bulb isn't tricky to make, you know all the components. But it's something that is essential to the operation of the system. We've designed our converter to match our capacity pretty closely so that you don't have any waste. And the real issue here is you can gather a lot of energy very cheaply and easily, but a lot of losses occur in almost any system. So what we're trying to do is eliminate those losses by designing the system to be tight. We want everything to fit together almost like an organism so that it performs at the peak.
Okay. Now, there are other systems out there used Fresnel lenses for concentrating solar. I'm thinking of International Automated Systems. They've got an industrial level system. And I should mention maybe two questions going on here. The one question is maybe some of the competing designs out there that you know of and how your system compares to them, contrasts to them, and then also the fact that you are also contemplating a commercial variation of this design. I mean, not commercial, an industrial
exactly, an industrial variety. In an industrial variety, of course, there are going to be some significant differences. Industrial operations, generally, you want a lot more than 6 kilowatts. We're looking at like 50 kilowatts and up or something like that. There's very little to distinguish one system from another when it comes down to solar concentrators in terms of the large power plants that they're building at this time. There are small systems that people are developing for use in the field or in home, but I don't know of any other systems that are available out there right now or even in the works that target the home user that use solar and steam. Now, there are a number of systems that use mirrors versus our lenses, and the mirror systems, while they work, tend to be high maintenance. You have a very precise optical surface. It's expensive to manufacture in most cases. And maintaining it properly is a real issue. In our system, you literally can go up there and wipe it off with a cloth. You don't have to worry about scratching any optics for the most part.
In terms of maintenance of the system, can you go out and squirt it with the garden hose a few times a year? Or what kind
sure
of maintenance?
Can. Very, very simple. Spray it with a hose. Why not? It won't hurt a thing.
And how often would you anticipate that a home user would need to clean off the panels?
Well, it's going to depend on where you're located. If you're in an area that's humid, I've noticed in some places algae can actually grow if you don't get enough sunlight on plastic surfaces. In other areas where it's very dry, dust may stick because of static electricity. And so one of the things we're looking at is a coating that will eliminate a dust problem. But another thing is, The design we use has the grooves of the lenses down so they don't trap dust and dirt in them. So there's some little simple common sense things we've done to make it as easy to maintain as possible.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that really kind of captured my attention on this, my personal interest or my personal holy grail, I guess, for lack of better terminology off the top of my head here, quest is to come up with a system that is cost-effective that people can power their own homes with that is as cheap or cheaper than what they're paying for electricity right now, and that is renewable. So they have their own power generation system. They're no longer dependent on the grid. And it seems to me that you have accomplished that with this system.
Well, and that was our target. You know, the goal is to make people basically as free as they can be. There are all sorts of sources of energy around us. There's no shortage of energy. We're swimming in this stuff. The deal is we have to be smart enough and clever enough to be able to harvest it, convert it to a useful form, and do so economically. And that was our target. And we started, you know, basically from scratch. We didn't make a whole lot of assumptions about what people could or couldn't do with it or what was available. We really came at it from a first principle basis, and that's the only reason we were able to reach this goal. We didn't follow the herd on this one. We didn't follow most of the assumptions that people make when it comes to generating power.
One of the things that occurs to me, and I'd like to just bounce this off of you, that what is really the heart of the system is that you've combined two modalities. You've combined the hot water heating panels solar system, and you've introduced the flash conversion of already hot water into steam. And would you not consider that to be the crux of, I mean, you mentioned earlier that the turbine is very important as the design, but do you think that what you have here, if you were to boil it down to the essential breakthrough of what makes this work, is that you're taking already hot water and you're flashing it to steam through the Fresnel lens?
Well, absolutely. You know, the big deal about making the steam in the first place is it takes a huge amount of energy to go from room temperature to near boiling. And then when you reach that point, it takes a lot of energy to go from the liquid to the gaseous state. So by using preheated water, which is something that most people want anyway, hot water, we've taken that energy hill away. We're already at the top of the hill. And yes, that really is the crux of the principle. Getting that water hot enough so that you can use it for other purposes also makes it the tool for getting over the hump with the steam pressure. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm. And as the steam goes through the turbine, what kind of processing do you have to do to take it from steam back to liquid so you can put it in your tank?
Well, actually, there's no process involved at all. The material, when it transfers its energy to the turbine, condenses back into water. The temperature's down, the pressure's down, and it's basically just hot water at that point.
So it goes in as steam comes out as water.
I'm sorry?
It goes in as steam comes out as water?
That's correct.
And how hot is it when it's coming out of the turbine?
Oh, it's right at boiling point. Very hot.
Uh-huh.
And you know, if you maintain that temperature differential, then your efficiency gets to be very high because the energy from your collector panels is right at boiling point already. The key is to keep it right at that operating regime so that you're just about to boil.
One thing we've not gotten into yet is your background, and I was looking at your bio on Coast to Coast. You've worked at Martin Marietta Aerospace for 10 years, weapon systems, computer-based automated test equipment, wrote nuclear EMP test software for the Pershing 2 missile system, worked on Patriot, Copperhead, tank, killer advanced attack helicopter systems. You've really done some fascinating work.
It's all fun. It's all fun work. And my background is very simple. I never went to college except to raid their libraries. I get my hands dirty. I work hands-on with the technology. You'll find out more that way than you ever would sitting through a class somewhere. You have to learn the mathematics to make it work. You have to know how to weld. You have to know how to build things and cut things without mangling your limbs. You have to know some electronics, some control theory. But, you know, these are things that you learn very rapidly because, you know, I've always had a drive to know how things work, and I've always wanted to know the next step. So when you begin to get into a field like this, and you don't have a traditional background, you also find you don't have many of the traditional barriers. And, you know, you've got to know your physics. That's an absolute rock-bottom must. You've got to know physics and mathematics in order to make this work. Mm-hmm. But once you go from there, you can learn anything if you're driven to do so, and I am.
That's a great story. Really briefly, we've got about 5 minutes left in the show here. Let's just talk about some of the other energy projects that you're involved with. You're involved with this World's Nest project and this other foundation. Just give us a thumbnail view of some of the other work that you're involved with.
Well, I've done some work with some friends who are developing a high-efficiency, low-cost photovoltaic cell. And I don't want to mention their name just yet because they're getting ready to do something big and expect them to come in very cheap. I've done some work in other systems as well, and not necessarily energy. I've done a lot of work in robotics and have a strong interest in space. And one of the reasons for developing this system, as you see it, that I've been working on, the turbine and the steam, this technology is directly applicable to use off the planet. So it could be installed in orbiting solar power converters. I've got an association with Gene Myers of the Space Island Group. We've discussed a lot of these plans. He's working on orbital solar power in the near future. And so I would like to see the technologies we're working on developing presently eventually end up in space, because we could generate power on a continuous basis using the sunlight that's falling 100% of the time in space and beaming it back to the Earth. So that's one of the future projects.
Speaking of space applications, there are... NASA is looking at, for example, these space collectors, which would then transmit electricity to the Earth wirelessly. Would you see this system as being a superior system to photovoltaic for space collection of solar energy?
Oh, absolutely. The cost of making photovoltaic cells is very high. And if you build these systems, such as I have developed, you literally could set a mine and a foundry on the moon, manufacture the parts, and shoot them back to high Earth orbit where they'd stay in the collector system. This would mean you don't have to launch this stuff from the ground. And think about this. If you were building solar power satellites in orbit and you had to manufacture all your solar cells, you don't have the facilities there or the materials. You'd have to ship them all up from Earth. A system such as I have designed can be built from lunar resources, the metals and the minerals right there, and it's a very simple factory to build compared to what it would take to make photovoltaics. The other thing is, the collector system can be made of silvered mylar plastic, which weighs only about 10 grams per square meter, which is very, very lightweight. So you can manufacture a huge facility that has only a fraction of the mass of a photovoltaic facility, and it can be all done with tools that you can launch off the Earth in one shot. Easy to do. Brings the cost down by a lot, too.
If you're in space using this system, would there be another liquid besides water that would maybe be preferable?
Yeah, there are many things you could use. There's probably about a dozen good working fluids. Some people suggest using either a freon or a propane. Propane is very easy to work with because it liquefies easily and it boils easily, and they use that in some systems. You could use ammonia, you could use silicone oil, you can use almost anything as long as you're able to transfer the heat from your collectors into your generator. That's all that really matters, and it doesn't solidify or freeze on you in the process.
All right. Tell us about World's Nest. What's that about?
Well, basically, it's all about being able to make a sustainable home, and the concept is simple. You can generate your own electricity, you can recycle your own water, you can generate your own fuels, you can grow your food, and you can maintain your home with little or no outside input in terms of consumable resources. Everything, you know, the target is everything should be recyclable. Everything should be renewable. So the work that I've done with the World's Nest is basically an assessment of some of their technologies and to help them develop some of the things. And the biggest project is to make sustainable homes. The target is a 7-day home that's made from recycled material that normally would hit the landfill, has complete off-the-grid systems in place and ready to run in a week. And you move in and you never have a utility bill. And it's cheap. Less than $100 a square foot is what we're targeting.
Are you actually living there?
I've been living at World's Nest since April, and I moved out of the area temporarily on this project, and I'll be going back there very shortly.
Uh-huh.
It's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place.
Socially, I imagine that's a lot of fun hanging around those people.
Well, yeah, you know, you meet some fascinating people, you have some wonderful conversations, and I'll tell you something else. The building is beautiful and the view is just unparalleled. We're right at the joining of two arroyos, and you've got a beautiful view in all just miles in all directions, surrounded by miles of higher desert and mountains.
Uh-huh. Anything we haven't covered on the topic of the solar Fresnel system?
Well, I think we pretty much hit all the high points, and I'm going to be placing more videos and some instructional material on my site eventually so people can see exactly how to duplicate some of the things we've done. I think people really enjoy a good demonstration, particularly if it involves melting or burning something.
And your website being xenotechresearch.com?
Yeah, that's correct. I've got quite a bit of different projects on that site that people may find of interest. We've got our alternative energy stuff, solar power, space projects, and also Mars research. So it's
spell Xenotech for us.
I'm sorry?
Spell Xenotech for us?
Yes, xenotechresearch.com. Xenotechresearch.com.
Great. Well, Charles, it's been a wonderful time talking to you. I appreciate you coming on to talk about your 6-kilowatt concentrated solar design with a 3 to 5 year return on investment expected, available 3 to 9 months from now, unless you're a do-it-yourself and you can start working on it today. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.